Hey guys, it's Matt here, and I got a story for you. When I was a kid, I was playing hockey, and oh man, there was this one year, this one team, we could not beat these guys. They were all over us. They were competitive games, though. They were tight, but we just could not beat them. And I remember the last game of the year, it was up against this team, and we were gearing up. We were like, we have to get these guys. When we won that last game, it was so satisfying because we finally got the victory over the team that had dummied us, that had dominated us for so long. I think this is the same thing with sexual brokenness, with sexual sin, where there's been brokenness in our lives and the enemy has come and taken ground and he's dominated us for so long, but we get to make a difference. We get to be part of a message and a mission of freedom. It is such a cool opportunity. So I want to invite you, men and women of any age, to be part of the Action Squad. The Action Squad is something that we're putting together right now. We're looking for 100 people to be on the Action Squad. There's going to be some competitive nature to it. There's prizes. And we're going to work together to help produce a documentary that is literally going to change the world. We're featuring stories of sexual brokenness, of people who have been restored and redeemed, reconciled to God and to people in their lives. And we're going to feature these stories in this world-class documentary that will be a resource for churches to host movie nights, for small groups to watch together, for families to watch and be inspired by. And it's going to highlight the problem in the church, but also show the power of God that is at work when we bring this stuff to light. And so if you want to be part of the Action Squad and help us put this documentary together, I would love for you to go to restoredministries.ca/action squad. You can watch a 10-minute video there that I put together on what it can look like for you to join us in this mission and be part of putting this documentary together. So restoredministries.ca/action squad. Hope to see you there.
Welcome to the Pure Victory Podcast, full of hot tips to help you win at sex, conquer porn, and find purpose in staying free forever. Here are your hosts, Matt Klein and Braden Hafner.
Hey, welcome back to Pure Victory Podcast. Matt here, Braden here, and story time. When I was 20, I went to New Zealand, and I was going to go to Australia. It was a lifelong dream of mine, a childhood dream, at least, to go to Australia. My parents were like, you don't have long enough to do Australia. Go to New Zealand. It's fun. There's a lot to do. So all over New Zealand, there's these people in these vans, smaller vans, but they're painted with all different kinds of cartoons and animations and stuff. And people just living in their vans. I'm like, this is a cool.
That's a thing in New Zealand.
Yeah, it's like everywhere. Okay. It's pretty cool. Or people like locals do it, or mostly I think probably people travel there and they do it for like months at a time. And I thought I had missed the boat to live in the van life. And here I find
There's still time. Having Shannon
with us. They're showing us there's still time.
That's right.
They're empty nesters living on the road. And it's pretty cool. So we're excited to have you guys here, having Shannon. Yep. And share about your life a little bit. I think it's pretty unique and cool.
Heard you say is that we're old. So I caught that part very clearly.
Good start, Matt. So good start.
I appreciate you're off a good start here, Matt. No, we appreciate you you having us on as well. So it's great to be here. So not quite a van, but I'll kind of go to the beginning here. So we are Javier and Shannon, founders of 24/7 Marriage, and we established 24/7 Marriage about 14 years ago, really with a desire. For us, it was kind of I had pastored for about, 15, 16 years, had done a lot of work in this area, but a common thread that was weaving through everything that we were doing was couples coming to us asking about marriage, dating, right? And so we just kept seeing this theme overall. And just through education, through schooling, it just kind of was an area we just started moving towards. And really, it's more, I think we always say that it kind of chose us more than we chose it. And it became something that just flowed naturally from us. And this love and this desire to work with couples. But what we begin to see is how the enemy was really coming and attacking marriages consistently. And so what we wanted to do is be able to kind of step into that place. And so as we've been running the marriage ministry for the last 14 years and working with couples and speaking and working across the U.S., we saw an uptick in a need, especially during COVID and during lockdowns. And in the midst of that, we said, what can we do to invest in the couples in a radical way and still continue to do the work that we're doing? So what we decided to do is we sold everything we had in California. Like you said, we're empty nesters. And we got a 38-foot fifth wheel. That we fully gutted it and remodeled the whole thing, and it's fully wrapped. You know, it's not painted, but it's wrapped on the outside. It's got our faces on the outside and kind of a cartoon character type of theme. And it's called the Marriage Lab, and by 24/7 Marriage. And so what we've done is we've been going across the U.S. touring, speaking at churches, doing marriage boot camps, doing workshops, and really seeing an incredible impact in the lives of marriages across the U.S. So it's been a pretty radical, a little over 2.5 years.
Almost 3 years, yeah.
We were telling you before we started, 50,000 miles in about 34 plus states or so. So it's actually been pretty incredible seeing the work that's been that we're doing.
Yeah.
That's awesome. How many breakdowns have you had on the road?
Knock on wood, Matt. Why'd you say that?
That's awesome. That's awesome.
None.
None. We work very well to ensure that we're safe in that respect and we're checking everything. But yeah, with the rest of God, we've had nothing.
Good for you guys. That's awesome.
Incredible. And I mean, if those that are listening can't see, I'm looking at it right now. It looks amazing. Like beautiful job. That's incredible. I love living that. Yeah. Or fifth wheel.
So sometimes people get it confused with, like, you know, what it is that we're, you know, that we're in. So it's pulled by a truck. So, you know, it's a little bit different than like your trailer, you know, just pulled by a hitch. Right. This is pulled by the bed of the truck. And yeah.
Incredible. I love that. That's amazing. And good for you guys. So I didn't share this with you guys, but I'm part of Family of Canada. So marriage ministry is near and dear to my heart. And I'm so thankful to have you guys on to talk about something today too, that definitely affects marriage. And that is our libido differences. And surprise, surprise.
We don't know anything about that.
Don't know anything. No. Us neither. So we're going to be all ignorant talking about this today.
It's again something Matt dropped on us before the call. Like, hey, let's talk about this. Sure.
You know, you guys can think quick on your feet.
We love you, Matt. Absolutely.
I know. And I trust you. I believe you. The closest thing we've ever done to this, it was so funny. It was, we did an episode on sexual compatibility. This is like a year or two ago, and we were doing a Google search on like beforehand on what is sexual compatibility, and I found this article, and it said at the start of the article that sexual compatibility is very, very important for the success of a relationship. And then it went on to say that sexual compatibility is when each person in a relationship likes the same thing and has the same likes the same frequency of sex. Or like, wow, so no relationship is going to make it.
It's describing a unicorn, essentially. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. So that's why I think it is important to go into libido difference. And sorry, Brad, mm-hmm. and I know I cut you off.
Oh, no worries. Yeah. So, I mean, we know that we're all different in this area. Every marriage, husband, wife, we are different, right? And libido is no exception to that rule. And so I would just love for you guys to maybe begin there, talking about our difference in libido. And feel free to use your own story, because I know that you have something to share in that regard. But why is this so hard? Why is libido such a challenging thing in marriage?
Well, I think, first of all, social media and the movie industry and the television industry doesn't do us any favors, first of all, because they paint a picture of that compatibility that if you both don't like the same frequency at the same time from every season of marriage, then something's wrong with you. And we have 30 years behind us. And looking back, there are very, very short seasons where we were matched. Most seasons, his was higher, mine was lower, mine's higher, mine's lower. And we've had to work through those differences and figure out how to work together. But there were a lot of roadblocks along the way.
Yeah. I would say, I mean, and you asked, right, in terms of, like, you know, why is it such a big issue? And I think it is the picture that, you know, cultural society does paint, right? But it's also this expectation that we have oftentimes, right, coming into marriage, of what it should be like, right? That he should always.
A preconceived idea.
Yeah, like yeah. He should always. And if he doesn't, then something is wrong. Something's wrong with him. What is he doing? What is he looking at? What is he involved? Right. And then what happens on the other side, which we can get into this a little bit more, is she may be thinking, well, what's wrong with me? Right. There's a narrative, a story being played out now on that side.
Oh, I thought that for years.
Yeah. And so for us, like we're coming from a place like early on for us, I think, you know, it was an absolute struggle. So we're just going to come from the place of like our story, right? It was an absolute struggle because I was probably a lot higher. And typically most men peak, right, in their 20s and early 20s, right? And most women it's like later in life. Now, that's not widely known by most, right? Because they think men should just always, no matter what, right? And, you know, society, culture, we joke about it when we're doing our workshops and we're doing our boot camps, right? You know, that women want to be wine and dine. They want, you know, love and cuddling and touch, you know, and non-sexual touch and all these things, right? And men are like, hey, just show up,
naked with right? a plate of food.
Yeah, and we're good to go, right? And the food's optional at that point. So it's one of these things where we have learned how to navigate this, but we knew early on to answer your question, like I did feel honestly that hey, if I'm not in that place where my libido is there, then it's something wrong. And she was feeling like hey, she wasn't there. And she had those same questions. And I think it plays to the dynamics within the marriage. I believe it has an impact in terms of like how that couple is then communicating about it and connecting. And I think it then plays into other areas, right? It trickles down into other areas of that marriage. So it does, I think, play a very significant factor, not just early on, but in every season of marriage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What does stop couples from talking about it? And how could you coach someone on breaking through those communication blocks?
They stop talking about it because it's an uncomfortable topic. And most of the time people approach it already on defense. You know what I mean? Like they come at their spouse, like, why don't you? You never, you always. And it's like, whoa, you just
said you should be like,
why don't you want me? Why don't you desire me? What's wrong with you?
Yeah.
So we always take the approach of like teaching our couples, you need to step back and get an outside perspective of what's happening. Your spouse is not out to attack you. They're not against you. There are many factors that could be playing into it. And when we kind of paint a picture for them, you can see them de-escalate. They're like, oh, okay. Cause you have to talk about things like, how old are you guys? What season of life are you in? Is there medical conditions that you're unaware of? Did somebody just go through some major trauma or the loss of a loved one? Like there's so many things that you have to consider. And we're 30 years married and we're marriage coaches. We teach for a living and we still navigate this. Like we continually have the conversation, but we're not scared and we're not afraid of each other.
Yeah.
We continue to talk to one another about it often.
Yeah. And I think especially when I've been sitting with guys around this subject, right, when it does come up, they don't bring it up because, well, what's wrong with me? Like, why don't I? Right. Like what's taking place, and that fear, like Shannon just mentioned about bringing that up to their spouse and being vulnerable about it. Come on. And let's be honest here. Like most men aren't going to go to another guy and say, dude, my libido's down. Like something's wrong. Like, I don't really want to have sex that often. I mean, cause most guys, like buddies might say, well, what's wrong with you? Right. Cause their mindset is, well, you should. I mean, all guys do. That's what drives us. Right. And in reality, I would say probably a large majority of those men actually at times struggle with the very same thing. So we've done some posts and some conversations around men. It's okay. If this is you, it's okay. You're not broken. There's nothing wrong in the sense of like, you know, let's dig into this and find out, because you're believing the narrative that society says you have to be the guy always, always, always. That may not be true for you in this season. Let's find out why. But it's also okay when you bring this to other guys. So as we have these conversations, we see a lot of men stepping up and saying, yeah, me too. Yeah, that's exactly where I'm at, right? It absolutely flopped for us, right? Where she didn't have that much of a drive early on in marriage, and I did. And it came to a season of life, two things that happened. I think we can be really vulnerable and honest on here, right?
Please.
I hope so. I mean, we have been to this point. We'll continue to be. So two things happened. At the age of 37, I started having prostate problems. At 37 years old, problems that typically don't happen until like you're in your 60s or later, right? So very young, that affected my libido. 100% medication I was on affected it. And I was afraid to even come and talk to people about it or even mention it, right? What are they going to think of me? So a lot of it was also controlled by me, by this place that I had, that I struggled with from family of origin. What would the guys think about me if I said this? They're going to think I'm less of a man or whatever it may be. What's wrong with you? So I would hold that in, right? Because I'm trying to control the narrative of other people and what they think about me. So that plays into it. And so now I'm navigating through that, and I just have no desire. I mean, no desire whatsoever. And it was an absolute crazy thing. Like, I don't want to, she could have come at me and I could be like, okay, sure. It just wasn't it. Now, my desire for her was there, right? Mm-hmm. It's not that I didn't desire my wife, I did. But that physical place of like engaging and moving towards her in that, I was in a place where I just didn't have a desire to do that. And that began, it has begun to shift and change over time.
Yeah.
Where, and then her desire rose up, right? And there'd be moments where I'd be like, do you just want to cuddle? Do you just want to hold me? Like, really? Is that all I am to you? Right? Because her need has gone up and I was kind of like right here. So we've had to engage in a lot of very difficult, hard conversations. And you can speak to it, like early on, the narrative that was going through your mind.
Oh, yeah.
Began to happen.
It was a nightmare. It was an absolute nightmare as a female. So you go through every scenario in your mind. And I know that women listening, wives are like, that's me. I'm not pretty enough. I'm not skinny enough. I'm not good enough. I'm not tall enough. I'm not short enough. I'm not whatever. And it's so I did the things where it's like, I need to work out more. I need to wear a certain outfit when he gets home. I need to make sure that my hair and makeup's done so he's totally turned on. And I was trying to fix it on the outside because I figured if what he saw, that would flip the switch for him. Like that would click it. And I wish that I could say that in a couple months after some deep, hard conversations, it got better. But if I'm being honest with you, it was years. It was years. Mm. Now it has zero to do with me. Like I know I am so secure in his love for me. And I know that he loves me. He tells me that I'm beautiful. He finds me attractive. Like I don't feel that physical weight, but it took years to rid myself of it. It took a lot of me on my knees and just asking for God to walk with me in that, because I just, as a woman, you're just like, again, you know, society, the world we grow up in, it's like, my hair is done. I'm wearing a cute outfit. What more could I do? What did I do wrong? Why aren't you attracted? Why don't you want to have sex with me right now? And it took many years and we've worked through that and we're at a healthy place right now, but we still have to have the ongoing conversation. And the thing with mixed libidos, and most marriages do, the small minority have matched ones, they're the minority, but most every other couple, majorities, they're somewhere, they're up. What we tell couples is the spouse with the higher libido needs to, the spouse with the lower libido needs to rise to the level of that spouse with the higher libido. So we don't say to a spouse, because you have a lower libido, your spouse that has a higher need just needs to tone it way down and wait for you to catch up. So it's this compromise and it's this conversation and it's really like a dance. Like you and your spouse are having this dance, this conversation that you are inviting each other into. I know what season of life he's in. I know what's going on physically with him. And he also knows that I have a high need right now. And because our desire ultimately is to serve one another, not just in the bedroom, but serve each other with our life and in our marriage, in our covenant, that we're gonna do that sexually for each other because we desire to want to care for each other's needs. Mm-hmm. So it's really this song and dance that you have to do with your spouse and having these conversations and being comfortable enough to have the conversations.
I'll pause there to see if you guys have any comments on that. Sorry, because we'll just keep talking. Sorry.
Yeah, but well, you keep talking.
It's great. I did have a question because I'm picking up on a lot that you guys have grown in and worked through in your marriage, and creating that safety and security between husband and wife is an important part to have the conversations so that you can be vulnerable with one another. Because I know that often these conversations can be uncomfortable. And if you feel like you're sharing some real hard stuff that's maybe hurting the other, or you're perceiving it that it's hurting the other, you pull back, you withdraw, and you stop sharing. And then that's when that gap starts to widen between you two and your intimacy starts to suffer. So I'm just so curious for you guys. Obviously, you've lived a lot of life together as husband and wife. How did you come to build that safety and security so you could be vulnerable and share about what's going on and listen to the other so that you have something to foundationally build out from?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think a lot of it for us is we started in, if you know of Stephen Covey and the 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, you know, he talks about seek first to understand and then be understood. And we kind of always approach that with one another, is this place of, okay, how do I pause and understand where they're at, what they're navigating, where that's come from, right? It's very easy early on that we could see, like, you know, we can absolutely see the problem and not see the person and not understand what is taking place and what is the reasoning behind that. And so for us, we've always approached it with, you know, hey, I believe the best in you. You know, you're not withholding or doing this because of whatever reason, right? To be hurtful or malicious. But in this case, it's that there's something else, right? The thing is never the thing. Like, what is actually really going on, and being able to build that. And so I think when we come to one another, it's with that seeking to understand, to hear, right? But then to truly listen, right, to what is being said and what is taking place. And we've spent a lot of time to build that emotional security, safety with one another, because we are saying, I want to hear, I want to listen where you're at, and giving space for that. And there is times where it was very easy for me early on to defend what she might be saying. Yeah, but you don't know. And this is what, and this is happening here, as opposed to understanding this was, it's very real to her what's taking place and how she feels about it. And we are careful in the words that we use when we come to one another and how we unpack that, right? So that she knows, if she comes to me and says, hey, let's talk about this. Let's talk. I want to talk. I actually pull back at those words. Why? Mm-hmm. Because growing up, my dad used to always say when I was in trouble, hey, we need to talk, right? So I relate it to that. And to her, she just wants to connect. So she's learned how to come to me within the right words, with the timing as well. All these pieces matter to be able to be sensitive and understanding to where the other is at, and to have the right, you know, the atmosphere around it and the timing, all those pieces around it. What would you say?
Well, my answer would be completely different.
Yeah, perfect.
And for us, our marriage is a covenant that is founded biblically on the Word of God. So I have full rest and full security in my marriage and in my relationship with Javier based on the one thing that he's always done since day one. And that is, he is humbly submitted and on his knees before Christ. And because he does that, I safely rest in our marriage. And I'm not afraid of any conversation, anything that will come our way, or anything that will happen because of that. Now, he doesn't glow in the dark. He's not perfect. He doesn't glow in the dark. Don't listen to him. But he is always been on his knees before God, praying and lifting up, protecting, guard, guide, and governing our family. So I rest in that. That's where my security comes from. It doesn't mean that there's not hard conversations, or I haven't been scared, or I haven't been frustrated, or anything like that. But I am always secure in knowing that we will get through that because of that covering, that spiritual covering he brings to our marriage.
Yeah. Did that answer your question, Brent? I'll make sure.
Yeah, that's great. Well, and it's really wonderful for us to hear kind of your process, because so often it's theory, right? But no, you've lived it. And so we appreciate your honesty and how you did create that safety and security. I think that's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You referred to it earlier, and I'm wondering if you can go into what are some of the maybe side effects, you could say, of miscommunication around libido and your sex life. When things aren't so hot and you're not communicating well, it spills out into other areas of your marriage. And maybe sometimes people can see, like, can connect the dots, and maybe sometimes not. And so if you could speak to that, that might be 100%. Helpful.
Yeah. So I think, speaking from us, and I think people can relate to that, is, I mean, if you're not effectively communicating about this area, yeah, there's resentment that builds up. There's bitterness that builds up. There is absolute frustration, right? And what begins to happen is, and again, I'm going back to that again, because it's what takes place. We've seen it time and time again with couples, and it's happened with us, right? That narrative, that story begins to be built. So if you don't come to the table and sit and talk about this and have open dialogue, and I'm going to tell you, it's been hard for me. For her, it's not difficult to talk about all of this. It's not. Mm-hmm. For me, it grew up a bit prude. It was never talked about at home. So think about family of origin, right? So that has this impact.
Yeah.
And so I didn't talk about those things. No one brought those things up, right? I had to figure it out. In addition to that, then when it came to talk about it, I'm like a giddy little schoolboy when she mentioned something. I'm like, okay, you know, it's just ridiculous, right? I'm a grown 50-year-old man, but yet still those areas can be uncomfortable, right? And so we've ensured that we're making space to talk about that. But I think what happens when we didn't early on, it would create a frustration because I didn't know how to talk about it and how to bring it to her or address what may be going on. And she was communicating her frustrations, but not in a way, right, where I was open to hear and to listen, to receive. It was like, well, you and you and you. But behind closed doors, it was like, well, what's wrong with me, right? Yeah. So there was the blaming, but there was also the story being told to her, like, hey, you're not good enough. Do you see what happened in your past? Like, you're not worthy of being pursued that way. And that just began to get played out. And so we have seen when couples don't engage in that, they begin to build even contempt for one another, right? They begin to say, well, I always want it and you don't. So what you're basically saying is you're better than me. Right, you're healed in that area, and I'm not, and so we begin to build that contempt for one another. So we've seen that time and time again, and even in our
we've seen it spill over in our own marriage, just in our attitude. Like, we can quickly become really short with one another. Passive aggressiveness
become short.
I already am short.
If you're not watching the video, yeah, I'm pointing in that direction.
It has spilled over into so many areas of our life. Communication, the way we interact with friends or with our kids. And the thing is, once you identify it and you can recognize it, then you know the source of it. So quickly, we can pretty much identify within a few minutes of an irritability maybe that's going on. And it's like, you kind of go through your short list of it. Was it sleep? Was it a travel day? Was it this? Or like, no, it might be sex. And it's like, okay. And so we usually come to the table and we can identify it and get back on the same page. But we also have to remember that we're human. And for me, I need to operate from a place of grace, where I'm not so judgmental that because sometimes in my mind, it's like, Javier, we've talked about it. We know the solution. Why aren't you operating in what the solution is all the time? And it's like, well, we're human. We're flawed people. So we need to have a lot of grace and forgiveness for one another when we don't get it right. And
I had to learn, like, because there was frustration that was coming in, like I had to learn how do I pursue her well in this? How do I move towards her even when it's not natural for me in this season? And we realized it could flop, right, as we move forward. Mine can increase and hers as she goes in the later seasons of life could shift again, right? We get that. But I think there's this consistency, right, of us building intimacy with one another. There's a consistency of how we're seeking to understand one another. There's a consistency of knowing that, hey, like we've been through these different seasons, it's going to be okay. Let's continue to stay at the table of communication and walk through this, be open, be vulnerable with one another. And again, like we mentioned earlier, seeking to understand where each of us are at. And so I think there's a commitment that's made from the very beginning of you're struggling with this, that it may be an ongoing thing that in various seasons of life, it could shift and it could go back and forth. But it doesn't change what we're going to think about one another. And that we're going to come to one another and have those conversations. And so it's very easy to allow this to be one of those issues that brings division. We're seeing it in couples. It brings disunity, division, it brings destruction, right? And mainly because, right, they'll come to us and we'll have a conversation. Have you talked about this? Oh, no. Well, mm. How long has it been? It's been
months.
It's been years. And you've never talked about it? No. But yet they're sitting there, right, wanting a solution to this, but they've never said, mm-hmm. I want to seek to understand. I want to come to that place where we can have a conversation about that, even though it's difficult and it's tough and I may not understand. And we do a lot of that with one another.
Yeah.
I can't imagine what that feels like for you. I don't fully understand. I want to understand. I want to seek to understand like what it is that you're feeling and going through in that moment. But man, how many couples don't talk at all about it, right? They just retreat because they've already told themselves this is the way it's going to go. This is what's going to happen, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm. That's true. What's the role of forgiveness in this?
The role of forgiveness?
Yeah.
We try to hold on to as long as we can to one another and hang it over each other's head. That's usually our goal. And kind of pull it out of our back pocket later as a weapon. Like, here's a scorecard. Here's how many times I gave in. No.
15 years ago, remember the scorecard?
Sounds you like remember it that one time when we were in that hotel? And yeah, it doesn't work. The scorekeeping never works well. But you want to answer?
No, keep going.
So the role of forgiveness, I mean, I think is that is so pivotal here. Because here's the thing is like when we step back and we really see the person and recognize what's truly going on, that there's something underlying there. Like we never encounter in speaking with couples where they're talking about this symptomatic thing up here. But in reality, right, there's this deeper wound and brokenness. And what happens is like if we don't approach one another, even with empathy, right, to understand that, to come into that place with them, then we're in those moments when we feel frustrated, we feel like, hey, I'm trying to do my part. I'm trying to pursue them. And their libido's low. They're just not engaging. Like I can build that resentment, right? And then I can allow unforgiveness to take root, right? And then that just grows and grows and grows and I grow bitter more and more. And so it's a huge piece, I think, is being able to release and to forgive your spouse. But I think that I don't know if you even get to that place if you're able to slow down enough to ask, hey, what's really happening here? Mm-hmm. Like truly, right? If we can catch downstream, right, some of that, or we can catch it upstream and say, hey, like this is what we need to address. Mm-hmm. And as we navigate this, this is how we commit to address it as we move forward and how to communicate about it so that we're not getting this place where there is this root of bitterness and we have to, you know, I mean, not that we're not going to be, you know, forgiving towards one another.
Yeah. But I think that for a lot of couples listening, you have to see this as a long game. And so often we look at the situations within our marriage like laundry, like I took it out of the dryer, I folded it, I put it away. We're done with that topic. And this is one of those topics that because we're evolving people, like every 10 years, you evolve into another version of yourself. You're 10 years older. your body's 10 years older, physically you're changing, like everything changes. So you can't assume what worked in year one of marriage for your sexual intimacy is going to work in year 30. That's just silly. So the same pair of pants you wore at year one probably won't fit at year 30. Maybe they will. That's awesome.
I still do.
You're still do. So we have to look at this as a long game and know that it can be an ongoing revolving door conversation, that you're going to keep revisiting it, and that body language is so important in this conversation. How you conduct yourself. Are you folding your arms? Are you rolling your eyes when they say something, when they share about what they like or what they don't like or how they're feeling? Those are important things that you can either devalue or add value to the conversation, because you're going to need to keep talking about this for a long time.
Yeah. We always say that between desire and fulfillment don't happen in the same season, right? So there may be the desire for where you want to see, you know, each other in terms of matching libidos or sexual drive, you know, is the same, or the amount of time, all those kind of things. Like, you may hope that those things are there, but ultimately, like, that's sometimes the desire and fulfillment don't happen in the same season. So the desire could be there, but you may have to wait for the fulfillment of that. And guess what? When you get to that place where you feel there's that fulfillment, it can switch at that point, right? It can flop.
Right. That's really well put, actually. I've experienced that. Well, my wife and I both, I shouldn't say just Amy, but thinking about the long game and just like, yeah, we have a desire, but maybe it's being fulfilled later on, or things that are being fulfilled now or desire 6 years ago. But having that mindset of the long game has been really, really helpful for us. So
yeah,
I love it. I love everything you guys say, everything you guys put out on social media. It's where we connected on Instagram. And so where can people find you, and what do you guys have to offer with 24/7?
Yes. You can find us at 247 Marriage on all social media platforms. Our handle name is the same everywhere and anywhere you want to go. Our website is 247marriage.org. The best way to get a hold of us would be through social media. There you can find out about any upcoming workshops. We will be in Southern California in September, and we do have 3 more boot camps coming up remaining here in 2023. We will be in Flagstaff, Arizona, Oregon, and Northern California.
That's awesome.
Yeah, well, that's great. Thank you so much, guys, for taking part in this with us. We probably have many more questions, but this is such an important topic. We appreciate how you guys have navigated this, and we can learn from you and others. And we're just appreciative of you just opening up your lives for us. And for all of you out there listening, I hope this gives you hope and just understanding that you can move closer to each other, even if you feel like there's a gap here, that you can come closer, you can get better as a married couple. And so we just leave that with you. And thank you so much for taking part in this with us today. And we will hope that we'll see you next week, and we trust we will. So thank you so much.
Thanks for listening. If you would like to hear more, please visit purevictorypodcast.com to subscribe. This podcast was made possible by the generous donations of our subscribers. If you would like to help support the cause financially, once again, please visit purevictorypodcast.com.